Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Amazing Grace.
I'm pretty sure I opened the broadcast yesterday saying that we had one more principle to go in learning how to live in the light of eternity from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And then, as I was concluding our study of the third principle, getting ready to go on to the fourth one, I never quite got to it, ran out of time. That does happen from time to time, but all of that to say that today we are definitely going to get into the fourth and final principle of what it means to live in the light of eternity. Now, most of you know exactly where we are because you are a regular listener to this broadcast, but I am aware that we have people every time we broadcast who are tuning in for the first time or maybe have not been able to listen to us for a while. And so I just simply need to remind you that Solomon is teaching us in chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes that the key to living a fulfilling life on earth is to live in the light of eternity. And I've said this over and over again, but I must say it because that's the whole key to understanding this chapter, and in a very real sense is the main theme of the entire book. To live a life of fulfillment, of satisfaction, of happiness, if you want to use that term, here upon the earth, you must not focus upon the things of the earth. When you make those your goal, you will not achieve what you are seeking. But if instead, listening to what God reveals to you in His Word, the Bible, you make living for God your goal, you will find that the things of this earth, as granted to you by God and as received from God by you as His gifts, not things that you have made the main goal of your life, you will find that they will provide a great deal of satisfaction. But either way, whether you receive those gifts that many people think are essential to happiness in life or do not, it really will not make a great deal of difference in your satisfaction in life because it's all wrapped up in God. And God doesn't change. And God doesn't fail, and God doesn't disappoint. In fact, those who pursue Him find greater and greater fulfillment the further they develop their relationship with Him. So that's the main thrust of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. We'll get on to principle number 4 in the broadcast on this Thursday, August 13. And many thanks to those of you whose financial gifts make that possible. Now, there are 4 principles for how to live in the light of eternity in the last half of this chapter. The first 3 we have covered. They are, number 1, accept life on earth as a gift from God, verses 12 and 13. Number 2, accept the circumstances of life as appointments of God, 14 and 15. Third, accept the injustices of life as under the domain of God, verses 16 and 17, and finally, accept the trials of life as the instructors of God. You understand what I'm saying? Accept the trials of life as the instructors of God. When you have a trial, a test, a disappointment, a difficulty in life, which you have now learned to accept as the appointment of God. That was number two, accept the circumstances of life as the appointments of God, and that involves both happy circumstances as well as unhappy ones. But we go one step further, and that is not only to accept them as having been appointed by God, but for a purpose, namely, to instruct us, to teach us something, something important, something that God is faithful to teach us, and this is the only way to do it. God never wastes a trial, and God never brings harm, or harm's probably not the right word. God never brings hurt, sorrow, pain, disappointment unnecessarily. He doesn't do that without a very good reason. And I can't tell you what all of his reasons are, but I can tell you what one of them is, and that is to teach us some valuable truth. Now, where do we see that in these verses? Verses 18 through 21. I said in my heart, this of course is Solomon, the king, speaking, and the author of the book, I said in my heart, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them, that they may see that they themselves are like animals. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and all return to dust. Who knows, verse 21, the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animals, which goes down to the earth. Now, this is one of those challenging sections in the book of Ecclesiastes, of which there are a number of challenging sections, that have often been misunderstood and have been used to teach the wrong thing. But here's what we learn, and let's see if we can work our way through it. Number one, God tests us. The first statement of verse 18. I said in my heart, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them. And the word test there has the idea of purify, separate, winnow. You know what winnowing is? In the old days, in Solomon's day, the way that farmers would separate the wheat from the chaff is to winnow it. There were several processes by doing that, but basically it was a separating process, and it's still done today. It's not done the same way. It's not done primarily by stomping on the grain, either yourself or animals, or driving a sledge over it, and then throwing it up in the air and letting the wind blow the chaff away, because the chaff is lighter than the grain. Throw it up in the air and the grain falls back to the ground, but the chaff, hopefully, is blown away by the wind. But of course, that's an imprecise process, and sometimes some of the chaff will fall back down to the ground still mixed in with the grain, so you have to throw it up again, repeat the process for a long time to get something close to a separation, a complete separation of the grain from the chaff. But that's the picture here. God winnows us. God tests us. God separates the elements of our life. He separates out the worthless elements, the chaff, so that the worthwhile elements can be preserved. And God tests us for what reason? And this takes the next several verses. God tests us to cause us to deal with our earthly mortality. That's what this whole business is about, death. And when he says that we are like the animals, he's not saying that we are completely like the animals. He's not saying that we don't have a soul that lives on beyond this life, as the animals do not. That's not what he's saying. That's what some have misconstrued this passage to say. And you can see why. If you read the passage, you can see why people misunderstand what he's saying. But what he's telling us is that earthly life, human earthly life, is like the animals in that we, like the animals, die and return to the dust. And that's not new information, and that's not contradictory information. That goes clear back to the Garden of Eden when Adam first sinned and God pronounced his judgment because of sin. And we read in Genesis 3:19, rather, that from dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Now, that statement is found in a lot of funeral services, particularly at the graveside and the burial service. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes. I don't use that particular formula, but that's what is said. And it's simply stating, and this is in Christian funerals by Christian ministers, quoting a liturgy, a statement that has been written and repeated for many centuries, that all have agreed in studying that statement that it is accurate with biblical truth, but it's only talking about the physical body. And the physical body of man returns to the dust in exactly the same fashion as the physical body of animals. The statement does not say that this is all there is of man. That's how it's misunderstood by some. But what it is saying is to live for this life alone is foolish. That's been the whole point of this chapter. Because earthly life at the time of death is no different from the animals, why therefore do you live as if this life is all there is? That's foolish. To live for this life alone is terribly foolish because it's coming to an end, and in the final analysis, everything that pertains to this life turns to dust. It's all going to be consumed. It's all going to be destroyed. It's all going to be gone. It's all going to be swept away. And so God tests us, he purifies us, he winnows us to cause us to deal with our earthly mortality. We are headed to the grave. And to cause us to understand the reality of life beyond the grave. And he does get into that here when you get to verse 21. Who knows that the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animals, which goes down to the earth. Now, there's three ways to understand that verse, and I can see that I'm not going to have time to deal with them all. But it is a statement of man's immortality. It would be best understood not as a question, which is the way it is framed in my translation, but as a statement. The spirit of man goes upward, but the spirit of animals goes down to the earth. In other words, it's just the exact opposite of what some have misunderstood it to be saying. It's not saying that nobody can know whether there's any difference between men and animals as far as life beyond the grave. There may be, there may not be. That's unknown, that's unknowable, that's simply speculation. But what we do know is that we all die and go to the dust like animals. That's not what it's saying. It's saying there is this difference. The spirit of man goes upward, but the spirit of animals goes down to the earth. Now, we'll have to get back into that a little more, in a little more detail on the broadcast tomorrow, so I hope you'll join me then. Until then, this is Greg Barkman saying good day, and God give you his eternal peace.